Hey, everybody, let's have a meeting. My name is Amy, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Bleach Up Speaker Meeting at the Nava Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety will tell his or her story.
Hello, Vanessa. Hello, family. Hello, family. My name is Vanessa, and I am an alcoholic. Hey, family.
Okay.
It's Faye. This is another Monday night Blue Chip speaker meeting. After three readings, I was told I always read all the black songs. Anyway, this reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealed accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, we'll hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. Now I'm going to introduce our speaker. And our speaker is this young lady I met a little over a year ago, and I had the pleasure of being in her life and sponsoring her and taking her through the 12 steps of AA. 12 steps of life, right? Because we deal with life on life terms. And we've been through some of it together. Some life on life terms stuff, right? And she made it to the other side. I'm talking about, like, I can remember a sponsor telling me, like, shut up. You ain't had no matter what. But I seen this young lady go through some no matter what as a newcomer, right? And I was glad that I was able to be there to help her through her process. Because that's why we all are here, to help each other. You know, and without further ado, I give y'all Reese. No. The mean and me. I was good to go until, like, just a couple of seconds ago. I got nervous as hell, like, who would have thought with my big mouth ass. My name is Sarita, and I'm definitely an alcoholic and an addict. If anybody knows me, you would not have thought that my heart is racing like a mouth. But I told my story once before. I had my cherry popped. But I had to tell the PG version. So I'm going to tell the real version tonight. So excuse me if I have to tell it blunt, but we growing up in here, this ain't no treatment facility. So I'm going to keep this shit real. I was born in 1976. I'm 41 years old. Born in St. Louis, Missouri. My mother was 13 years old when she had me. I had a stepfather. I never knew my real dad. I was kind of bounced around from my mom to my grandma. My grandmother lived in Alabama, but my mom moved from St. Louis to Detroit, and she met my dad, and they had been together. Both of them were young. He worked for General Motors, and he was kind of like the only dad I knew. And as time progressed, I started growing up, and by that time I was in the fifth grade, and my mom became pregnant, and I had a little sister. We didn't know at the time, but she was born with leukemia cancer. And
She was a sickly baby, and at the age of 4, she died. And it really sent my mom through a depression. And I don't know if you guys know, but back in 1984, crack cocaine hit the scene in Detroit and tore the city up. And it was like my mom died inside, and she couldn't bounce back. So, you know, when people get into a depressed state, some people turn to alcohol, and other people turn to street drugs. And just like people say how the drug is, you use it, and she was instantly hooked. And my stepdad couldn't take it, and he left. And I was so angry, because I felt betrayed, and I was like, I will never be like you. Like, I hated her, and I would write these letters to God, and I would wish her to die. I was like, God, just kill her. I would. Like, who does that? Like, who writes letters to God to kill their mom? But I did. That's like nasty. Like, I want her to die. Like, I came home from, I can remember this time. Like, I came home from school, and like, we had nice things. Like, my mom worked at a hospital. Like, we had nice things. And I came home from school, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but remember when Nintendo's first came out with the Mario Brothers? Like I had one of those, right? And I came home from school, and everything in the house was gone. Like, who sells the dining room table? Like, you know, like, I didn't know about the drug, that how powerful that shit was. Like, my Nintendo was gone. Like, and that's hurtful for a kid, you know, because I was like in the 7th grade at this time. So, you know, coming from the family that I came from, my great aunts, which is my mother's aunts, they came from St. Louis to put my mom into rehab, and off I go again, shipped off again, and I went to stay with them, and I was so angry, and about a year had passed, and I kept asking them, when is my mom going to come get me? When is she coming to get me? And they would say, she's still in rehab, but they were lying to me. She didn't want me. So I would act up, and I would be so defiant. And my aunt used to keep these gallons of, what is it? It was green, Tanqueray. She used to keep these gallons of Tanqueray. And before I would go off to school, I would take sips of that Tanqueray, and it would ease my pain. And that's where it started at. That's where the journey started at. And I would fill it back up. I would fill it back up with water. I would put water in the Tanqueray. Because every time my aunt came home, because she owned a beauty shop, and every time she would come home, that would be the first thing she would do to relax. Right? So I thought to myself, if that was the first thing you could do to relax, then maybe I could drink before I go to school to relax. You know, because it seemed like to me, like, I wasn't getting it, like, educational-wise. Like, I felt like I wasn't learning. Like, I felt like if I took a drink, maybe it would help me, educational-wise, to learn. So, she figured that shit out real quick. Like, she took a drink and was like, this shit is weak. Like, what the fuck is going on with my Tanqueray? You know, a person that drink know that shit, right? You know, like, she figured that shit out. So, yeah. So she asked me one day, you been drinking my motherfucking Tanqueray? I know ain't nobody else in this house been drinking. No. What is Tanqueray? So she started marking that shit. Yeah, boy. Yeah. Yeah, I said, fuck it, I'm going to drink the wine. Put some water in that shit. Yeah. Yep. So, I thought to myself, I said, yeah, I know how I'm going to get home. I'm going to cut up every day. I'm going to cuss you out. I'm not going to do what you going to tell me to do. I'm going to do what the fuck I want to do. I'm going to become so unbearable. You're going to have to send me back to Detroit. And it worked. It worked. And when I got back to Detroit, I thought to myself that my mom was going to be so happy to see me. But it was the opposite. She was like, what the fuck is you doing back here? I ain't got no place for you. See, she had found herself a young beau. Young. That can throw that dick up in her. Yeah. I'm just being honest. He's about 25 and she's 45. Yeah. It's like, damn. He only a few years older than me. But just keeping that shit real. When you got something around you, you know, you ain't got no responsibilities. And then lied to the dude and told him I was her sister. You talking about unmanageable. You know I had to go along with that shit? Because me and her only 10 years. That was hurtful. That was real hurtful. And I got back there. I didn't even have a bed to sleep in. They were sleeping in a twin bed. I didn't even have a bed. But see, with me and him being so close in age, when she would go to work, he would buy me MD 2020 Peach. Right? But see, she was so abusive, he would buy me that MD 2020 to get close to me. You see? And he'll tell me, if you do what I want you to do, I won't let your mom put her hands on you. It sounded like a real good idea at the time. But see, I thought to myself, well, at least he's not raping me. But he really was mentally. But as a child, I did it out of safety. I thought, well, hell, it's a win-win. I'm drinking for free, and if I do what he say, hell, I won't get beat up tonight. And if I drink enough, I won't feel any pain. See, this shit for me always started with the alcohol every single time. But it became unbearable, you know? So after a while, those hands on me felt so nasty. I cringed every single time. I couldn't take it anymore, so I ran away from home. So now the journey begins. So I ran away from home and I called the police. They took me back to the house. They wouldn't let me stay because they said it was not a good living situation since I was sleeping on the floor with a sheet on a hardwood floor. We didn't have no refrigerator. My mama and the dude was sleeping in the twin bed. I was sleeping on the floor with just a sheet. So what happens? They take me to a group home. I'm living in a group home with 23 other girls in Detroit, Michigan. Leave that group home, go to another group home, but a smaller group home. Leave that group home, go to another group home. Then it happened again. One of the staff members there molested me. But I didn't know at the time that it was molestation. See, I mixed it up with affection, right? Because she was buying me things. See, I didn't have anybody to show me real affection in my family. I didn't have anybody to tell me they loved me and treated me good. But see, she was raping my mind and I didn't even know it.
because I was going through a sexual identity crisis. Because, see, what he did to me, my mom's boyfriend, was rape me mentally. So I figured that if she is being protective of me, taking care of me, and making me feel good, this couldn't be rape. But she manipulated my mind. Anytime you got a grown person, grown, doing that to a kid is rape. Because see, I don't know no better. What the hell do I know? I'm only 14 years old and you 30 years old. That shit ain't right. By no means necessary. By no means necessary. But I didn't know that at the time until I got grown. Because I'd be damn, I got a son, I'd be damn if a grown ass woman try to get up under my son. That shit ain't gonna happen. No means necessary. So that shit damaged me. And all those issues I never had ever even dealt with. So, by not dealing with those issues, I turned to the streets. Once I got out the system, see, in Detroit, once you turn 17, they give you a $500 check and they say, bye-bye, see you later. I had nowhere to go but to the streets. And when I went to the streets, I learned real quick, real quick. I wasn't green no more. My mama still wouldn't even let me come home. She still wouldn't let me come home. But by this time, her addiction changed though. She stopped smoking crack, but she switched from crack to pills. That was even more dangerous. She would nod out driving. By this time, she had two more kids. They only 6 months apart. I would worry about her all the time. One year after having those two kids, she came up missing. 30 days later, her body was found in an abandoned house. They found her rolled up in the carpet. I was 14 at the time. Somebody cut off her hands and her feet. Body decomposed. Yeah, this shit is real. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? I didn't. So I went searching for something to deal with it. And at this time, I really didn't know shit about liquor. We drunk beer. OE. Code 45. Slit small liquor. That's how I dealt with it. Weed. I ain't know shit about no lie. What the fuck is that? That's how I dealt with it. I drunk 40s every day. I couldn't even go to class sober. Yeah, that's what I did. Turned to the streets. I learned how to sell weed and cocaine. I watched people get high. And I was so curious about that shit. I said, this shit can't be that powerful. So I tried that shit. And it was. That was the best shit I ever had in my life. It took away everything. But I noticed, right? I never picked that shit up first. I always had to have that drink first. I always had to have something to drink. It always started with the alcohol. Like the alcohol told me, drink me first, it did start that shit. Like, I never could start that shit without the alcohol. Like, the alcohol was the power behind that shit. Like, I couldn't understand. And soon enough, right, I was the person at the store begging for change.
excuse me, ma'am, can I have 50 cents, please? I just want to get a burger. Excuse me, daddy, do you want to have a date? Excuse me, ma'am. I've been out here for days. I'm so hungry. I was so convincing I could sell a trash bag to your ass. That's real ass shit. It's fucked up. I was my own worst enemy, a weapon to myself. Killing myself. It was so bad that I had developed ulcers in my esophagus from drinking. Soon as I would drink a Colt 45, right? Them dollar beers, the Arab sale, soon as I would drink that shit, all the foam would come up. Quick. Like I would throw up all the foam. Because I was an alcoholic. Crazy. Like, I'm sure that everybody got their own war stories, right? I mean, I got like a whole bunch of that shit. But I'm only going to share a couple. Right? To let you all know, this shit is real. That the shit is manipulative. The motherfucking disease is insidious. When they say it's insidious and the shit is out to kill you, it's out to motherfucking kill you. So I'm going to share one that was out to kill me and I almost ended up dead. I was in Birmingham, Alabama on a Sunday morning about 6 a.m. Had been up for days. All I wanted was a beer. Right? But they don't sell beer on Sundays. They sell them at the bootlegger house though. Right? So I jumped in the car with a trick. Right? So the trick took me to the bootlegger house. He bought me 2 beers. I was like, damn, I'm home. Right? I don't know if y'all know about Black Label beer. You know, but they sell them in Alabama, in Birmingham. So, I got the beer and we pulled behind this store. And he was like, yeah, go ahead and drink your beer. And I couldn't figure out why he wouldn't drink it. Right? So, I'm drinking the beer. And he started reaching over me. Right? He's reaching over me, but he's going up under the dash where the glove compartment at. Right? So, something told me. It wasn't something told me. It was God told me. Take off your motherfucking seatbelt. Right? When he came from up under the dash by the glove compartment, he pulled out a knife. Right? But by this time, I'm opening up the door because I see something shiny in his hand. When I jump out the car, he jumps out of the car. He had one of those knives that you could put your fingers through. Like one of them curved knives that you can put your fingers through. By that time, I had hit the street. He pushed me down and he got on top of me, right? This man stabbed me in my face, right here. He stabbed me in my face. He stabbed me in my arm. And he stabbed me in my leg. He was about to stab me in my eye, right? And I asked him, I said, sir, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. Thank God it was a white woman driving down the street. And she jumped out of her car and threw herself over my body. Right? An angel. Right? And all I could hear her saying was, get off her, get off her. Right? I almost lost my life. Right? Over trying to get some motherfucking alcohol. Insidious. Insidious. Almost lost my life. But you know what? Did it stop me? Jail's institution isn't there. See, that one was about death, right? Jails. Was down there by Garnet Station, about to catch the Greyhound. Got kicked out of rehab, about to catch the Greyhound back to Alabama. I said, fuck rehab. I'm giving me a motherfucking beer. Go across the street. I'm going to get this Colt 45. Went in the store, got the Colt 45, got me a cup, pulled in the cup. Police pulled up and said, what's in that cup? I said, sir, it's tea. He said, bring the cup here. I said, why? It's tea. He said, ma'am, open up the cup. I opened up the cup. He said, that ain't tea, that's beer. Put your hands behind your back. I said, really? I said, I'm sorry, officer, for lying to you, but I know this is beer. Can I just pour it out? He said, no, you lied to me. You're going to jail. I said, sir, my luggage is in the Greyhound. We can take it down there to property. You're going to jail. Okay, they took me to jail. Got out the next day. I was so fucking mad because you know what? This disease is insidious. Got out of jail. I went back over there to the motherfucking store. I said, you know what? I'm getting this motherfucking Colt 45. You fuck, what the fuck they talking about? This time, I said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not even going to pour it in the motherfucking cup. I'm going to motherfucking drink the shit inside the bus station, in the motherfucking bathroom, in the store. So I'm coming out the motherfucking store. Dude standing next to me with some liquor. I'm trying to cross the motherfucking street. And the officer says, whose bottle of liquor is that? I said, officer, it's not mine. Dude trying to walk away. Officer says, if don't want it, y'all want to claim it? Fuck it. I'm going to take both of y'all to jail. I said, you know what, officer? It's not motherfucking mine. He said, you know what? Both of y'all put y'all hands behind your back. I said, damn, really? I just got out of jail for the same thing. You going to take me to jail? He said, yes, I'm taking you to jail. So I go back to jail again. You know what? And I sat in jail. I said, this motherfucking shit ain't going to beat me. Got out of jail. I went back over there to the motherfucking store to get me another motherfucking beer. This time I had my suitcase with me. Put the shit inside my suitcase. Took the suitcase over there to the motherfucking Greyhound in the bathroom, in the stall, and I drunk that motherfucker, and I won. Even though it cost me 2 days in motherfucking jail, I still got, I won, goddammit. And I was in the bathroom talking about something. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. But you know what? I won. It cost me 2 days in jail. Jails. 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 Right? Death. Jails. Right? That shit is hilarious, right? The ends you will go through to get your next fix. And y'all sitting here laughing, but I'm sure I'm not the only motherfucking one that just did some dumbass shit. I'm not the only one that got so drunk and pissed in the bed and swore up and down somebody poured water on them. Shit. I don't believe. Shit, I don't believe. I don't believe. My alcoholism. You know what? And this might be hard to say, but I'm glad that my alcoholism took me where it took me. Because now I have a chance to work on myself and create a new being in life. I have a chance to help the next person. I have a chance to look at life in a new total direction. Like, my spirit is great. And you know what? I love myself. And it's like, it's beautiful. Because I have a chance to help somebody else. And I know that they traveling down the same road that I travel down. I thank God each and every day. Like, I know I still
I'm not perfect, but I know I still have a long ways to go. But guess what? I know I'm on the right track. I know that I am. And I'm going to always stay humble. I'm going to always stay teachable. Because that's what recovery is about. Renewing your mind, your state of being. I'll never be greater than AA. Because I love AA. I even told my sponsor, like, even though, like, you know, my a big part of my drug addiction was NA, right? I told her I love AA because when I leave NA, I be wanting to get high. It's true. Like, I don't be wanting to get high, but I be thinking about that shit. You know what I'm saying? But when I leave AA, like, I don't think about taking a drink. It may sound funny, but it's true. But what's time you got left?
Don't worry about the time. Okay.
I can do that. I can do that. I have a sponsor. I have a grand sponsor. I have a great grand sponsor. I have a great, great, great grand sponsor. I'm plugged in with a sober network. A lot of positive people in my life. My family, they love me. I have a wonderful son that's in college. I got a boo thing. A little bit. You know, that I got permission from my sponsor. I could, you know, mess around a little bit. It's great. And you guess what, though? I waited a whole year. I really did. And I know why she told me to wait a whole year. You know what I'm saying? The reason why I waited a whole year is because in early sobriety, if you don't have no foundation up under you and you with somebody, you might get high behind some shit. You might take a drink behind some shit. Let your feelings get hurt and you got 4 months. Your ass might take a drink. You know? Yeah, some things has happened to me in this year. My grandmother lost her house a day before Thanksgiving, burned down to the ground. But guess what? She's okay, and I didn't find a reason to drink behind that. No matter what, I'm learning to process things in my life, and that's something that I never did when. In my drinking days, I the only way I knew how to deal with my emotions was to pick up a drink, and that's how I always saw things. Like, I didn't know, like, I had so much bullshit. Like, I'm just now dealing with my mother's death, because see, I thought I was the reason why she died, because I wrote that letter to God and I wished her death. And I thought that. And today, it's an unsolved murder. Because to be honest, in Detroit, if you black and they think that you was a drug addict, unsolved murders, baby. And that's just how it go. If you a white woman with some money, oh, they gonna find who killed you. And that's politics. That's just how it is. I mean, not even in the newspaper, not even on the news. Nothing. The type of murder it was, it should. If somebody cut off somebody's hands and feet, they really trying to hide the identity of that person. That's a high case profile. But, and you know, it makes me angry sometimes. You know, I mean, I have my suspicions about who did it, you know, but it's sad. It's really sad. It's really sad. Sometimes I think to myself, like, she not dead, you know. Like, I didn't see the body. It was a closed casket, you know. I make up in my mind that she not dead, you know. But my aunt said that it was her, because my aunt said that she had a mark on her body from when she was a kid, you know. So, but I know all of us have an expiration date. So, I just know that if I stop working on me, my expiration date can come soon too. If y'all stop working on yourself, y'all expiration can come real soon too. And I don't want that for myself. Because I was killing myself a long time ago. A long time ago. Shit. Shit is horrible and crazy. Horrible. Yeah. Right now I live in a sober living house. It's been pretty good. I'm looking for my own place. But I'm not in a rush. My sponsor said it's not a race. When it's time for me to go, she said I'll know, because God will move me. In the next 180 days, I hope to get my certificate as a peer specialist. So I'm learning how to set goals for myself, and that's what recovery is all about. I don't want to be stuck and stagnated, you know. I feel like if God has removed me from that lifestyle to another lifestyle, don't stay stuck and stagnated. You got to keep moving to help other people, you know. So I challenge each and every one of y'all to help just one person, you know, because service work. You know, if each and every one of us help the next person, the world would be a better place. Just help one person. Especially for the holidays. There's a lot of people out here that don't have nobody. You know? It's like, you can't sit here with like 20-some years, 10 years, 8 years, and don't help one person. That's not what recovery is about. You can't keep what you got and not give it away. That's not where we come. I'm not saying you got to go buy somebody $1,000 worth of clothes or something. You know, if you cook Christmas dinner, bring them a plate. You know what I'm saying? If they ain't got a hat and scarf, bring them a hat and scarf. It don't have to be extravagant. Just say, hey, I was thinking about you. Hey, I love you. You know, I know it's not much. If you see they ain't got a nice, a coat, Go to the Goodwill. Give them a coat. It ain't got to be brand new. Just help the next person. That's what my sponsor been teaching me. I said what I had to say. I'm just keeping it real. I ain't going to be making up no shit. You know. So, thank y'all. I appreciate y'all. I love y'all.
Thank you, Sarika. I've asked Tinsley to come up and pass out the chips.
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks so much for your story. You're keeping it real for sure. And we go to a lot of the same meetings together. And that's the kind of people who stay sober. People go to a lot of meetings. I found that out. Here at this meeting, we have a chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer a white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip? Anybody else for a white chip? After 30 days, we have a red chip. Whoa, we're out of order here. Silver chip for 30 days. Sorry about that. 30. And now the red chip for 90 days. on a roll here. Okay, what do we got? 6 months now for a yellow chip.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
Good stuff. How about 9 months for a green chip? Oh, no. Are there any birthdays that we don't know about?
How many?
It's 1 year.
How'd you do it?
Prayer, reading the Holy Bible, and attending meetings, and also rehabilitation program.
You didn't pick up last week.
I sure did.
She been up here all this week.
My name is Reese, and I'm an alcoholic addict.
Hey, Reese.
So, So this is 1 year and 11 days.
Oh,
yeah. So how did I do this?
Yeah, how did you do that?
GOD, good orderly directions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sponsorship. Sober network of some strong women in my life, prayer and meditation, meetings, lots of meetings, surrounding myself with positive people, listening to the alcoholic stale ass jokes and I love you, Tinsley. And, but those jokes do be stale. I'm just keeping it real, you know. You know that book, The Journey Continues.
That's
right, okay. But, and that's it, you know. And guess what? I do service work. I give back, you know. And that's how I've been able to stay clean.
All right.
And I give phone numbers and shit. That's it.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, I'm Julian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and I had the pleasure of giving this young lady her chip. I will let her tell you how many years. But this is Shannon, and I've had the joy of getting to know her better this year. Just watching her go through life on life's terms, which is really not easy sometimes. As you pointed out, we hit bumps in the road, and it's been a pleasure watching you use the program and sponsorship and on both sides to get through a tough year.
So, anyway, all right.
I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic. Miss is 11.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh!
And you know, as far as how I did it, I just didn't take a drink one day at a time. You know, like Julie said, you know, you go through life on life's terms, and sometimes that can be really, really hard. And you know, by going to a lot of meetings and by having that network and by, you know, being involved in service work and having, you know, those people to fall back on when things do get really hard, and turning to them instead of a drink or a drug when life gets you down, is super important. So by the grace of God and by not taking a drink one day at a time, you know, you can get here too.
Any other birthdays? Anybody want to reconsider on a white chip? Big hand for the chips you hold.
All right.
Thanks, Tinsley. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting tonight.
Mm-hmm.